This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM Channel 158. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland. I'm coming from San Francisco this week once again. Kelly's back in Las Vegas. Paul Carr about to join us, talk about the World Cup. I have so many questions about this Flo Balogun situation, let alone the two games today, which we'll get into, but I want to get to these tweets first. Ryan Hyatt, silent producer of Primetime Action back in the day, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
He says, both Gil and producer, Kelly, producer in quotes, Kelly, starting the week strong today on ANG. Gil continues to play a solid road game. That said, Drew Dinsick would at least have a plant or a rack of wine in the background. You don't like actual nature? You prefer like a fish tank?
That's a great call. We should buy you an empty fish tank to put behind you and just confuse everybody for 2 years. Be like, is there any fish in
bay.
There? Were there fish
it's
in
the
there?
Bay, man.
Are there going to be fish in there?
He says, by the way, gotta love Greg and his closer mentality. Never lets past events affect his attitude and altitude. Y'all have a day. that's what worries me a little bit, Ryan, if you know what I mean. How about them Niners? On Twitter, women's hot dog counts eerily similar to California's mail-in ballot counts, he says. But we have an explanation. We have an explanation. Thank you. I knew if you sent it out there that someone would have the official word on this. Johnny Franchise, shout out to you. Here's the Mickey Sudo situation again. If you're watching it live, the count on the screen is about at 32-ish, mm-hmm. 33-ish. Once it was over, she was given an official count, hot dogs and buns, of 38 and three quarters. I can't believe I'm talking about it this seriously, but Kelly, here we are.
But it's like six hot dogs off. Yeah.
Deserved. So here's the deal. At the 2026 Nathan's Famous 4th of July contest, Sudo won her 12th women's title, but the final result sparked confusion when an official total was bumped up to 38 and three quarter hot dogs from an unofficial count of 34. 34 was the unofficial count.
Okay.
During the live broadcast, some trackers and scoreboards showed her at 33 or 34, leaving both fans and Sudo herself surprised. Major League eating officials explained that the floor counter had initially missed a plate, and the head official judge caught the discrepancy during the final tabulation. Well, so there you go.
Well, good we caught it, but you missed a plate? A plate.
Yeah,
not a dog. A plate. Okay.
not practice.
Not practice.
But here, so I guess there's like five dogs on a plate. Yeah, so that would explain that.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. GV, New Jersey, New York. It's not often I say this, but given his past antics on Beating the Book lifestyle episodes, maybe we should bring in VR Ace to talk to Greg about his dating life, given the catfish concerns. Also, 100% agree with the guy who said over 3.5 cards in the U.S. national team Belgium game tonight. Weird day. Let's see. Oh, Nick G. We got to talk about this too. Gil, can you please explain how the Marlins pull Yuri Perez yesterday, pitching a perfect game after seven? Oh. How don't they give him a shot? Nick G, I'm so glad you brought this up. This happened, I think the more famous episode of this happened. You remember when Clayton Kershaw went, I want to say it was also seven deep, and it was perfect at Coors, no less. Do you remember this?
Yep.
And they took him out of the game. Drove me crazy then, drove me crazy yesterday. This modern day obsession with pitch counts is, by the way, Marlins almost gacked an 8-run lead, by the way, held on to win 9-8. As soon as they pulled Perez, it was just mayhem. I don't understand. Like, the one of the big reasons that I love baseball, or that, and I'll speak for my generation, right? The reason that we love baseball is because of the history of the sport and the numbers. If baseball didn't have the numbers that were these hallowed things, the rarities of a perfect game, I think my love for the sport would be halved, right? Really, like, honestly, I think it would be cut in half. And when they don't let someone like Perez chase history because of the modern day just sort of dogma about these kinds of things. Well, we got to preserve him for the long term. This record doesn't mean anything because we need him for our team that we're doing so well. We're only 4.5 out of the lead for the NL East. I just feel like I just feel like, man, sometimes you got to let the kid chase history. And that to me was just a travesty. Maybe I'm the old man saying this. No,
completely agree. Are you kidding me? It's July. It's the beginning of July and you're the Marlins. Like, come on, give the fans something.
Give the fans something. Well, I mean, they're having a great year. No question about it. But I just, when opportunities like that go by the wayside, it bothers me so much. Let's talk soccer, because the United States of America, a special numbers game investigation reveals that Team USA is in action. The round of 16 game tonight against Belgium. Paul Carr has been doing very well in the World Cup. He joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is the emperor over there at True Media Networks. Paul, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Gil. Happy to talk about a sporting event with no controversy. Everything's totally normal. Nothing unusual is going on at all.
Nothing at all. We started the show by sort of, again, painting the background for those who missed it. Okay. So USA beats Bosnia-Herzegovina 2-0, famously in that game, Flo Balogun. He gets a red card for what I think most people, right? This part is not the controversy, right? I think most people agree it's an accidental step on an opponent's ankle. But he got the red card. Where the controversy begins, beyond that, it's like, okay, maybe he shouldn't have got the red card. USA ends up winning even with a man short. But then FIFA's disciplinary committee ultimately now over the weekend, yesterday, suspends the automatic one-match ban under Article 27, clearing Balogun to play today. President Trump got involved. Howard Lutnick got involved. White House Task Force Leader Andrew Giuliani, if you're to believe reports, got involved. But then you have, right, you know, they said, oh, FIFA damaged the credibility of its own tournament, warning the decision creates a dangerous. So this is the thing. This is the counter argument here, of course, Paul, is that FIFA has damaged the credibility of its own tournament, warning that the decision creates a dangerous precedent. And concluding that nobody benefits from Balogun being allowed to play, not Belgium, not FIFA, not even the U.S. national team. That is the opinion of many. Now, I ask you, because the latest on this is that Belgium then granted the ability to appeal this morning. They are taking them up on that. They will appeal this. And my question to you is, give us how you feel about this entire situation. And most significantly for me, if the appeal is not granted, Paul, and Balogun is allowed to play, shouldn't we leave him on the bench for a while before we play him, just to let this thing go away for a little bit?
I mean, yes, but no. You can't leave your best, like your clear-cut best striker on the bench for a World Cup knockout game. So from a players on the field perspective, no. I understand what you're saying. And yeah, if this were a, you know, game 72 of 162 baseball games or something, sure. Even one of an NFL game, you sit him out for something, maybe, sure. But for a knockout World Cup game, you don't. As a coach, like, that's not your responsibility as a coach or a player to worry about that. You can play, he should play.
Yeah, what a gentleman you are, Gil. This is a FIFA problem. Absolutely not. Let's get the kid out on the field.
I am going to predict that he is on the bench to start the game.
Really?
This happened.
Wow.
I am. Oh, man. I am. I'm going to predict that it happens. I mean, come Kelly's from nowhere, right. Just a hunch.
This is a FIFA problem, from the fact that they don't have an established review process, which every league and almost every competition in the world has for what do you do if you disagree with a red card or a yellow card. There's usually some sort of review or appeal process. So that's not written down. FIFA didn't explain how they came to this decision. There might be some justifiable reasons to overturn this red card. It's a little fuzzy. I'm not convinced there is, but I'm not convinced there isn't. But FIFA didn't explain that. So Belgium wants to appeal, but they don't even know what to appeal because they don't have a ruling that they can say, hey, you didn't follow protocol, or this is as different precedent or whatever. So I'd be kind of surprised if Belgium's appeal is upheld, but I was also pretty shocked yesterday when 24 hours, 30 hours before the game, FIFA just out of nowhere decides that he can play. So it's a process thing. And it just looks like FIFA is making things up and catering to power, which they... It sure seems like they are. But
sure,
the fact that they haven't laid out the rule, they haven't laid everything out, just opens that up for a vacuum of opinion and speculation and all that sort of thing.
As Tim Lawson said earlier on Twitter, which I think was a great articulation of this, he says, in my opinion, the worst failure in this situation is that FIFA lacks a mechanism to appeal red cards in the World Cup formally. Should have been able to properly address this in the first place rather than digging deep for a workaround. So let's just put it another way. If this wasn't the United States of America, if this wasn't the leader of the free world chiming in, if this was, I don't know, say Cape Verde, right? Pick another random round of 16 team. This doesn't happen, does it? Red card stands.
I don't think so. And we're going to find out because like France is already appealing a yellow card that one of their best players, Michael Olise, got. And it doesn't mean a suspension for him, but if he got another yellow in the next game, it would. And they're appealing it. And I mean, they have a legit, somewhat legit case. Like he grabbed the guy's shirt a little bit and the guy went down like he got shot in the face. So, you know, again, I don't know that those are going to get overturned because we don't have a process for it. But that's the kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you might see every red card the rest of the way that's given by VAR appealed. And maybe that's part of the reason FIFA hasn't laid out their protocol, because they're afraid that it would open the door to, I don't know, Senegal's upset that they're the VAR that gave penalty or gave a penalty to Belgium that won that game shouldn't have happened. So it's just a giant mess that FIFA, a big wound that they've inflicted on themselves.
We'll get to today's games here after the break. Just give me, from the Paul Carr soccer hard-o perspective, just how great was that Mexico-England game yesterday? Completely lived up to the hype.
I mean, it was, I think I said, it was the game I wanted to happen most in the knockout stage, and got everything I wanted. I mean, we got drama, we got a red card, we got penalties, we got, you know, Mexico looked great for a first half. Mexico should have gotten a goal. I mean, they really played pretty badly in the last 20 minutes or so when they were up a man, just sending crosses in willy-nilly with no real plan. So I was a little disappointed in Mexico at the end, but the atmosphere and the competition was everything we wanted.
We'll talk more about that. We'll talk about Holland. We'll talk about the Golden Boot. And, of course, today's pair of games, including Team USA tonight against Belgium. Not to mention Portugal, Spain, the appetizer. Coming back on a numbers game. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The fireworks have faded, but we're still celebrating here at VSiN through July 7th. That's through tomorrow. For just $299, you get two full years of VSiN Pro access. That's nearly 70% off the regular monthly price. You'll get our NFL season betting guide, daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and every betting guide we do, season preview, and VSiN Pro feature we release over the next 2 years. Don't wait, though. Special 4th of July offer disappears after July 7th. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now to lock in 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander in San Francisco, Kelly Bidlin in Las Vegas, Paul Carr, kind enough to join us for a second segment. He comes to us from the heartland, Topeka, Kansas, right in the middle of the country. By the way, a couple notes here on Twitter. Tim Bowers, how many people are betting Balogun anytime goal scorer today? Glenn Ryder, the Balogun saga reminds me of when Andre pinned Hulk, even though his shoulder was clearly up. What would Jack Tunney do? And then Brian's breaking news and intel. I just heard Gil say Spain Portugal's the appetizer to USA Belgium. I know. It's not the appetizer. He says, insane. Spain Portugal is the entree. USA Belgium is a vegetable on the side of the plate that you won't end up eating. By the way, Brian's breaking news and intel, if that is your real name. I completely am aware of that. But from our very geocentric perspective, that's exactly what it is. But you're right. The battle for the Iberian Peninsula between Spain and Portugal. So I have a few more questions before we get to your thoughts on these two games, Paul. One. Okay. We were just talking off air. This tournament has been incredible. Just even the best player, right? From the best player's standpoint of them coming through. So we have a golden boot race, and obviously Messi has not played yet here in the round of 16. But Messi's got 7. Mbappe has 7. goals we're talking. Erling Haaland now has 7. By the way, the pecking order of that is Mbappe's actually first because he has 2 assists. Messi second because he's done it in the fewest amount of minutes. Then it's Haaland, followed by Harry Kane at 6. And you were saying arguably maybe the 4 biggest stars, 4 of the biggest stars, certainly of the tournament. What's your hunch on the Golden Boot? Let's start there.
I mean, you're essentially betting who's going to go the furthest because these guys are scoring a goal plus per game. So who's going to get, you got to get at least to get to the semifinals because then you get a final and or a third place game or a third place game. I mean, at the prices now, I'm looking at Mbappe 120, Messi 160, Haaland 500, Kane 750. I would rather play one of those long shots at those prices because, I mean, Haaland or Kane obviously is going to get to the semifinals because they're playing each other. So you're going to get the extra few games out of there. So that's the way I would look rather than take the coin flip essentially on Mbappe or Messi, given that they will have tough quarterfinal matchups in all likelihood.
Our boy, Mikel Oyarzabal, better get it going today.
I know.
Better get it going. He's at 4.
He's just hanging around. He's just teasing us, you know?
He really is.
They got a shot. They obviously would have to, they probably have to beat Spain in the semis and then hope Mbappe doesn't play in the third place game or something like that. Or beat France rather in the semis and hope Mbappe doesn't play in the third place game.
That's right. So the third place game counts in this. Oh, yep,
absolutely.
Man.
Often decisive. Okay.
Last thing about yesterday before we get into today. Obviously, Haaland, just unbelievable. But with Spain and Mexico, so let's just take this one by one. Red card deserved. It's 2-1. It's 2-1. England red card deserved. Then the goalie penalty deserved, right, to make it 3-1 after the penalty kick. Yep. After that, was the Kane penalty deserved in your opinion?
Two ways. One, it is always given. This has been consistent. It was early in the tournament. Luka Modric did basically the same thing and got it. So it's always going to be given. I don't like it. I mean, because the attacking player who is fouled can kind of just stick a leg out in front and get kicked and draw a penalty. So I don't think it should be a penalty, but it's always going to be given. As soon as I saw the replay and as soon as they're going to the monitor, there was zero doubt in my mind that it was going to be given. So I don't like it, but it is a penalty, at least the way they're currently handed out.
And then England just absolutely staves off so many opportunities for Mexico to tie this. And if, of course, Mexico ties it, then they still have the man advantage. The pendulum swings completely in their direction, but they never could score. But at one point, I want to say this was in the 90th minute, England subs in for Kane. Did you think the announcers made enough of that little detail? Like, wow, that was a risk.
I was a little surprised. I mean, Kane was gassed. So there was, you know, I understand it from a we're just trying to survive standpoint. And Morgan Rogers came in and gave them a little more up top and killed a minute or two when they got the ball on the other end briefly. But yeah, it looks odd. And you're going to regret that the second Mexico scores not to have Kane, not just for extra time, but he's your best penalty taker. And you would want him for penalties, obviously, if he gets there.
All right, to the games today, beginning with 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Spain and Portugal. The winner of Spain-Portugal takes on the winner of USA-Belgium. What I love about this tournament is just how everybody's into it. I'm meeting Joe Pita to watch this game. Everybody's into every game. And yes, this is probably the better of the two games, at least on paper. How do you see this?
I see a lot of Spain in this. I mean, Portugal really was not very good for most of the game against Croatia, but was able to pull out a win. And everything that Croatia does that gave Portugal trouble, just kind of pressing a little in the midfield, trying to control the game. Like Spain is just better at all of that. They're starting to look like we expected Spain to look. They beat Austria 3-0 in the last round, controlled the game, limited Austria's shots, et cetera, et cetera. Lamine Yamal is getting healthier, played almost the full game last time. So I just struggle with the way Portugal is built around Ronaldo, with him up top and just not contributing very much. It's hard for me to see how they're going to handle this Spain team. I feel like this Spain is just going to kind of grind this out. Portugal's not going to have a lot of the ball, kind of like they did against Colombia when they didn't do very much. They'll probably have less of the ball than they did then. So I love Spain in this game. -110, the 90-minute win. That's my pick here.
Okay. Paul, who, by the way, hit 2 of 3 that he gave out on Friday, it should be noted. Okay. And then the USA-Belgium. What are you doing with that?
I mean, if you've listened to me, you know I'm going U.S. here. I have U.S. over half a goal in the first half, minus 110. So U.S. to score in the first half. Look, this is just who the U.S. is. This is what they do. They come out and attack. They've done it all for the last year. They've played 15 straight games against World Cup teams, and they've scored in the first half in 12 of them. That includes Belgium in March, when they played them pretty evenly in the first half before the game got away in the second half with subs and such, and Belgium won 5-2. But that game was pretty even in the first half, even with several guys that are starting this game for the U.S. not in that match. So, I mean, the U.S., they're not going to change. Even if Balogun doesn't start, if it's Pepe or Wright, I don't think they're going to change what they do. They're going to press. This is a Belgium team that doesn't have a super proven back line as they have had in the past. They've kind of turned that over generationally, and it's, you know, it's not bad, but it's not a all-star type of back line like they've had before. So U.S. to get a first half goal, it's what they're going to do. I expect them to do the same thing here in this one.
Okay. So by the way, the World Cup schedule moving forward for the quarterfinals, we do have a day off on Wednesday. Thursday, France will take on Morocco. France after beating Paraguay 1-0, Morocco after beating Canada 3-0. Friday is going to be the winner of these two games today, Portugal, Spain, USA, Belgium. Saturday is a doubleheader. It's going to be Norway versus England. Oh, what a banger. Norway who beat Brazil 2-1, England who beat Mexico 3-2. And the other Saturday game will be the winner of tomorrow's final pair of round of 16 games. Let's get your thought on those if we could, Paul, beginning with Argentina, Egypt tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'm going to that game, that quarterfinal in Kansas City on Saturday. So I hope I'm not talking through my what I want to happen thing, but maybe I am a little bit here. I have Argentina to beat Egypt, lay the 1.5 goals, so at plus 115. Look, Argentina is obviously just better than Egypt. Egypt defensively they're worse than Cape Verde defensively, really, in this tournament. They've conceded better chances, even though they've played worse opponents. But Egypt doesn't have a high ceiling either offensively, only 5.1 expected goals in four games. That was near the bottom of the round of 16 teams. I don't know if Argentina's really gotten going yet. It seems like they're still kind of in third gear, but I think that's enough here. They're creating lots of high-quality shots. They've got that Messi guy. This may be a grind of a 2-0, 3-0, 3-1 type of game, but I'll lay the goal and a half with Argentina at plus 115.
They've got that Messi guy. It's excellent analysis, by the way.
Oh, yeah, him. Yeah, thank you.
And then Switzerland, Colombia to round it out tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm higher on Colombia than almost any projections I see. I really believe they could win this whole tournament. I'm not saying they're going to, but I think they're that good. They've got the ability to win games just about any way possible, whether it's, you know, score some goals, lock down defensively, press you in different spots on the field. They've handled the low blocks of Ghana and Congo DR fairly well. And when they go up a goal, they can shut a game down. That's kind of what they did last round. And this is a decent Switzerland team. They really are. But I just think Colombia's a little bit better. They've got a little bit higher end talent, especially Luis Diaz. Their guy coming in from the left wing from Bayern Munich in Kelly's Bundesliga, and they're just a little better. So I like Colombia just to win this one at plus 120.
All right, Paul's pick, Spain to beat Portugal today, then the United States over a half. First half goal, meaning United States will score in the first half versus Belgium tonight. Then tomorrow, the final two round of 16 games, Argentina given the goal and a half versus Egypt. Colombia to beat Switzerland. Paul, let's see how the Balogun saga continues for the rest of the day and how it ends up, man. What a tournament.
We got like eight hours before kickoff, so who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Long time for twists and turns. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. At Paul Carr, by the way, C-A-R-R on Twitter. Wes Reynolds on the other side on a numbers game.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, Gil Alexander from San Francisco this week. Once again, Kelly Bidlin back in Vegas. We don't get political on this show until politics becomes part of the story, Kelly. And part of this Flo Balogun suspension of red card, new from President Trump, confirms that he intervened with FIFA, says his respect for FIFA individual he spoke to has risen tenfold. That's a quote. Accuses the referee of being, quote, suspect, unquote. Says that he knows sports really well and knows it wasn't a foul, but didn't know what a red card meant. That according to Daniel's story on Twitter. There you go. Chiming in. So we'll see how this saga continues. By the way, Daniel's story, chief football writer over at the iPaper. Okay, I want to mention this because we lost. We hit on tennis now. We hit on Elise Mertens in the overnight, but we lost just now on Alex Ayala. Jasmine Paolini beats her in three sets. So I failed to mention also. So we lose. We lost a couple units here on the tournament match wise. We also lost the Iga Świątek future. It was the only future I ended up having. My future recommendations that I didn't end up playing, still really good, right? Fritz to win his quarter on the men's side, Osaka to win her quarter on the women's side. I didn't play them myself. Hopefully, if they cash, somebody did. But what I'm getting to here is, by the way, not only is Świątek out, Sabalenka's out, Rybakina is out on the women's side. Kelly, we're about to get to the quarterfinals. We have one more match. We're on Linda Noskova right now against Maddie Keys. They're on serve in the first set. We are going to end up, let me just give the nine remaining players on the women's side. Naomi Osaka, Carolina Muhova, Jessie Pegula, Coco Gauff, Marta Kostyuk, Jasmine Paolini, and now Keys and Noskova, the winner of that, will take on Elise Mertens. I have no idea who's winning this tournament. Man, you can throw all them up in the air. Whatever lands is a winner. I have no clue at this point.
Yeah, this is Wimbledon can get crazy sometimes, and it makes it fun. It does make it fun, and we're at a point where, man, it feels very up in the air. You got Osaka plus 250 right now, Pegula plus 450, Kostyuk 5-1, Muhova plus 650, Keys 7-1, Coco Gauff 9-1. There is six ladies shorter than 10-1.
Coco is 9-1. That's interesting. Okay, yeah. I guess she's playing Pegula. Maybe they think that. I mentioned this with John Yastrzemski and Will Hill yesterday. We are guaranteed to have the 10th different Wimbledon winner on the ladies' side in the last 10 years.
Wow.
That, so again, grass, anybody can win it. It's a short season, blah, 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 blah. 10th winner last 10 years. That makes a lot of narrative sense. Until then, you think of the history of Wimbledon on the ladies' side and you say, wait a minute, that doesn't track. Martina won 9 of these.
Yeah.
Serena won 7 of these. Steffi won 7 of these. And Venus won 5 of these. And I think Billie Jean King might have won 5 also. So this is a modern day thing on the ladies' side in Wimbledon. And I could not tell you. No one watches more tennis than I do. I could not tell you who's winning this at this point. Osaka's got 4 slams, but she's never won it on anything but hard courts. And Coco's got 2. She's won in the French. She's won on hard courts. She's never won slam here. Paolini got to a final against Krejcikova a couple years ago. Jessie's never won a slam. Maybe this is the Pegula slam. Zach has Pegula. Pre-flop. We'll see.
That's who I'm rooting for, Gil. I mean, I got to worry, but we got to start working on that retirement fund. We got to get some money put away. This would go a long way towards that. Okay, win a Wimbledon. You could start putting some money away and looking towards the future. I'm worried about that with Jessie.
Got to put some money away. Wes Reynolds joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. That's the number one part of the glue that holds this whole operation together. Kelly had got her up. But we were all happy for Kelly. Wes, it was a little more heartbreaking for you. Sorry to start there.
Yeah, and for Matt Brown as well. We both had Ben Coles, who looked like he was going to win this tournament. He had a 3-shot lead heading to the back 9. Ben Coles, by the way, playing mostly on the Korn Ferry Tour. He's probably going to get his card back, but has been up and down on the PGA Tour, has been kind of good enough to make the tour, but not good enough to stay there. But he won about a month ago on the Korn Ferry. So he's won 5 times. So he has won a major professional golf tournament before, albeit on the Korn Ferry. So it's like, okay, you know, even though it's not been done on the PGA Tour, he's going to get across the line here. He's leading in driving accuracy. He was leading for greens in regulation. He was playing very well. Then all of a sudden he missed a couple fairways on the back 9, couldn't get away. But nevertheless, he was heading to the par 5 where it's like, okay, if he birdies that, he's going to have a 1-shot lead heading to 18. He does not birdie. The par 5 hits kind of a clunky second shot and then not the best wedge. And then, of course, on 18, he right when his playing competitor hit a shot, like immediately after that, he's right up to the ball and just probably the adrenaline is pumping and he kind of overcorrects a little bit in his downswing. And you knew something was going to happen in this shot and it just bounces into the water, greenside water there at 18 and he was done for. So, I mean, it benefited the show. I was thinking that we were going to get one home at the John Deere. So that was probably one of the more disappointing ones of many disappointments and many runners up this year.
Yeah, it's a tough way to win, Gil. You know, you're doing a podcast with these guys and man, Matt and Wes have the whole leaderboard circled. I got one guy and he's one of the short shots out there and then has to go 9 under on Sunday, even have a chance, man. Wes, it was tough. I did think it was interesting. Coles was, you know, not a guy that we see a ton of throughout the season, but at first, Gil, I'm like, man, this guy plays fast. Like, that's refreshing. But, like, the final round, yeah, those last couple holes, Wes, it was like he was playing faster and faster and faster. And, yeah, you got to wonder if that came into play. It was just, like, let me not think about it. Let me get up there and hit the ball. And, yeah, I have a feeling that had something to do with the downfall at the end.
Wes, yeah, if there was that much on the line. No, I was just going to say, when you have that much on the line, sometimes the player changes his character a little bit when it's like, oh, my God, this is going to be life changing. I'm going to win on the PGA Tour. I'm not going to have to worry about the Corn Ferry. I get immediate status on the tour, an immediate 2-year exemption and getting the majors and all that. And those thoughts cross your mind and crossed them at the wrong time, I think.
If there were a live Wes Reynolds golf ranking system. That's you, by the way, Wes Reynolds. If there was a live rankings, where does Goddard rank right about now? Top 10, top 20? Where do you have him?
I'd probably go top 20 because he's a very good player. Don't get me wrong. So I'm not like casting aspersions on him. And he does have a lot of win equity. And he did win the Scottish Open, which was a really good field last year. And he's going to be defending that title, by the way, at Renaissance later this week. But the one thing he hasn't done, the three events he's won this year have not been like the signature events. So the fields have been maybe a little bit down. The Sony Open in Hawaii, Phoenix was a solid field, but it was not a signature event. So that's the one thing he hasn't done other than the Scottish last year where he's really won one of those big time events. I'm not even talking like majors or like a Players Championship, but you know, a FedEx Cup playoff event or a signature event. So that's why I don't have him up there with the, you know, the other guys, not even the top guys, but the other guys bottom of the top tens, like the Wyndham Clarks or Xander or any of those guys. So he's probably top 15 to 20 for me.
Okay. We're just talking World Cup with Paul Carr. Would you like to jump in on some World Cup action? You have a bet today for us?
Yeah, I sure would. And, you know, based on your lead in there, recapping what happened yesterday, 3 cheers for birthright citizenship, I guess, with Flo being eligible for the match tonight. Obviously, if I was Belgium, I would be furious. And I guess they're filing an appeal. I don't understand in terms of the inner workings, so I never want to plead ignorance on X or have like a take or anything, because some of the soccer snobs will come and get you. If you're a little bit out of joint, because I said something, I was like, what's the appeals process? You know, kind of questioning it. And it's like, well, actually, you know, and they'll go chapter and verse of here, Article 27 of this. I'm like, look, man, I'm just having fun watching the World Cup and actually winning a couple bets doing it. So I don't give a damn. All right. But I am on the soccer tonight. I do have Spain in the first match, -110 over Portugal. So I think Portugal's kind of been a little bit lucky to be here. And I think Spain, based on that draw with Cape Verde, maybe Cape Verde was really a good team as we saw on Friday night against Argentina as they took them to the limit. So Spain in the first match. Other side, we could talk about the USA match because I do have maybe a couple different angles that we can attack that one.
Let's do that. Let's talk about our football, American football. Wes, from our NFL betting guide as well. I love that you were able to detect the tone of, well, actually. I love that with tweets. More with Wes Reynolds on the other side. It's the Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
20 leagues, one mission, just win bets, baby, your premier source for daily sports betting picks. They break down the data so you can bet with confidence across the entire sports calendar. Scan the QR code or visit justwinbetsbaby.com today and start betting smarter with Just Win Bets Baby. The name says it all. Let me read a couple tweets here. This is from Tronsky, John Osher. Hey, Gil, you make a great point about the last 10 years of Wimbledon, each having a different winner, but the context omitted for non-tennis fans is the evolution of their courts since 2001, letting grass grow longer and is more akin to clay in some ways now. Not sure what you mean by the clay comparison, but yes, the grass is a little different. Still doesn't take away from the fact that one of those great dynastic players from yesteryear, I bet they could adapt and still dominate were the grass this length back then. Of course, I will also contend that the competition is much greater now, widespread. Drew from Boise, FIFA equals WWF. Move the final to the White House lawn, he says. And then Shrek McPhee, please tell me you saw Henderson on England get a yellow and snap his arm in half without playing a single minute last night.
I didn't see this. I read about it this morning, though. The English guy getting hurt without after the game.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal. Wes Reynolds joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, pardon me, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Wes, have you enjoyed this tournament more than you thought you would? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think because a lot of us that might not be like soccer 24/7, 365 are probably thinking, you know, it's a diversion, you know, it's bridging the gap until football starts and whatnot. But I've enjoyed it and I've been into it. I think it helps that obviously that the Americans have, you know, had some moderate success so far. I think quarterfinals would really be considered a success if they were to win tonight against Belgium. But one question I did have, like we were talking about the Flo red card that got rescinded for England last night. There was a red card in that match against Mexico. So Does that get handled by Starmer, who is about to exit Downing Street as the UK Prime Minister, or does that go all the way to King Charles in terms of getting that overturned is what I would like to know.
And when do you start the appeal? Because now you just appeal every red card, right? Like for the rest of the tournament, whatever country gets a red card, appeal right away.
Apparently so, because everybody told all of us, it's like, oh man, there's no chance. Like this is the, you know, long arm of the law, the iron fist here. Yep. And, you know, nothing's going to get overturned. And then it did. Like, these are the experts that would know about this process, not the layman like me, the layman soccer fan. But yeah, I've absolutely enjoyed this. I think the matches have been great. I think, how could you not get into it on Friday with Cape Verde against Argentina? How could you so not great. Get into that where it's like, this is one versus 67, right? So this is like, kind of, I don't know if it's a right analogy, but like a 116 in the first round of the NCAA tournament. And that's what this has become. Like, you know, March Madness is out and July Madness is in, apparently. Like, you know, what do they always do? This is March. Like when we get a close game in the NCAA tournament, it's this is July, because these have been really competitive matches by and large with a lot of goals and stoppage time. And, you know, a team's on the brink of defeat and then they just pull it back. And I've been intrigued by it. Hopefully we get some more of it here in the round of 16 and beyond.
What are you doing with Team USA tonight?
I played the over in this one, and I've had a lot of success with the BTTS, the both teams to score. Those have been like my best wagers in this World Cup because of what we're seeing, because the game's never over until they blow the final whistle and you get these late goals, like seemingly on a regular basis. I guess that's a little bit out of the ordinary in previous World Cups, but I played over 2.5 minus 140 in this one. I think both these teams are going to attack. And U.S., obviously, they like to attack a little bit on the edges and on the flanks. So another way you could play this, like from a prop standpoint, maybe go over 9.5 corners. And these teams, I think, have averaged like 8.5 or somewhere around that. So they've been below that number. But I think that this is going to be an up and down match. I think this is going to be similar to what the U.S. and Turkey was. Belgium, by the way, very experienced, a lot of big names. Of course, De Bruyne, Lukaku, but they're a little bit older. Like this is kind of the last of that generation. And then eventually after this World Cup, they're going to have to like go with the youth movement and kind of rebuild that program. But this is still an experienced team. And I think that these two, I don't think these two are going to be necessarily cautious here. You would think in the knockout round they would be cautious. I don't think that's going to happen here. And we saw the U.S. I know they didn't have all their players against Turkey, or Turkey, I should say, but they were a little bit leaky on defense in that match where the Turks got the late goal. So that's a little bit of a concern. In terms of betting the U.S., I would only bet them to advance. So you have to lay a bigger price to do that. I think that they do. I think that they are going to go and they're going to play Spain when Spain takes care of Portugal in the morning match. And then they're going to be the underdog. Then it's like, okay, here we go. Now we're against one of the elite sides, because I think Spain's probably the second best side. France looks like the best. Like, they took care of business on Saturday. That wasn't their match. Paraguay tried to like muck it up and, you know, make it really physical, even though they never got a card, and France got all the cards, apparently, even though Paraguay was playing a little bit of dirty tactics. But France and Spain looked like the two best teams. So I'd love to see USA at least get a crack at the Spaniards in the next round.
Let's go to American football. Our NFL betting guide has been out for a couple weeks now. Can't believe it's a couple weeks. Wow. June 22nd is when it came out. We haven't had a real chance to talk to you about some of what you wrote about. Give us the, I'll leave it open-ended. Give us the Wes Reynolds most outlying take based on sort of the market or anecdotal evidence. What's your most sort of a unique take on the season, would you say, at this point in the summer?
Probably, if I'm judging by the betting guide, and I don't want to give too much away because obviously it's available still, go get it at VSiN.com. But I think I was higher on the Houston Texans than the rest of our colleagues here at VSiN, and maybe the rest of the market, because we know what the deal is with Houston. Elite defense, one of the best defenses in the league. I think they were number two behind Seattle and all the DVOA or whatever metrics you want to look at. But I think that we might get a rebound out of C.J. Stroud, and you're having to kind of project that because C.J. Stroud has regressed from that rookie year. A couple reasons is because they've changed the offensive coordinators a couple times. I think this is a second one now. The offensive line has constantly been a work in progress there in Houston, and plus they hadn't had a really good running game. Like Nick Chubb was long past his prime, I think, last year as the running back. And then they had Woody Marks. I think he was a third or fourth rounder, I can't remember, out of USC. And he's a good, like, number two back. But this year, I think Houston finally has a running game. David Montgomery, although he's 29, that's like ancient running back years, right? But I still think he has something. And maybe he's out to prove something, Gil, because, of course, Jahmyr Gibbs took that job, and they were Lions were able to, you know, not re-sign David Montgomery, and Montgomery got a better deal in Houston. I think that he's going to make a difference in that offense, especially in the short passing game and just the running game. And Montgomery has a little bit more explosion out of the backfield. So you're getting that. You're also getting Tank Dell back, the receiver from the University of Houston. Remember, tore his knee early last season, and now he is going to be back. So I think he's got more weapons. They added a couple free agents, Wyatt Teller of note from the Cleveland Browns, Braden Smith at right tackle from Indianapolis. So the offensive line should be better, and we know the defense is going to be elite. So it's the AFC South, I know, and it's kind of like the little stepchild division of the National Football League, but I think Houston is kind of getting overlooked when you look at Kansas City and Baltimore and Buffalo and New England. Like, they're not looked at as one of the top contenders, and I think that they are. I think we do see a bounce back from C.J. Stroud, so very high on Houston this year.
I'm with you, actually. You and me are aligned on that. Let me ask it a different way. I've asked this in previous years. Is there a conventional wisdom take that you've heard, either again reflected in the market or not? Maybe you've just taken it in anecdotally, maybe from the guide itself, no names, but just generally speaking, a conventional take that you cannot get on board with?
Yeah, I'm a little bit gun shy about the Rams, and I know that the Rams on paper are very good, and this is kind of the last ride, more than likely, for Matthew Stafford, now that he's back from a TNT's wedding at Madison Square Garden. You know, they can focus on football. This is the last ride, right? And then they get Myles Garrett and add him to that defense, who is the defensive player of the year. I don't know if I'm convinced that the Rams are just going to run roughshod through that NFC yet. A rightful favorite, but it seems like it's being booked as a foregone conclusion that the Rams are going to represent the NFC there at SoFi Stadium again, like they did a few years ago against Cincinnati. Don't know if it's going to be that easy. And especially when you've got almost a 40-year-old quarterback, all of a sudden that back could be a real bother and injuries can be a bother. So I'm not as convinced on the Rams maybe as the market is.
Last thing, 20 seconds. Have you seen Life, Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness yet on HBO?
I have not.
Okay.
Do you recommend?
Larry Dave, I do. I read bad reviews about it. I freaking love it. Think it's hilarious. That's my recommendation. Thank you, Wes. Appreciate it.
You bet, guys.
Wes Reynolds, everybody. Coming back, a little baseball. Ed Adam Burke next on A Numbers Game.